We meditate because we have goodwill for ourselves and goodwill for the people around us. We've reflected on our lives and realized that the major cause for unhappiness in our lives comes from our mind, from the fact that the mind isn't trained, that it gives in to greed, anger, delusion, fear, impatience. And if it's going to learn how to resist these states, it needs training, training in mindfulness, training in alertness. Because once the mind is able to resist these states through mindfulness and alertness, we're going to be less likely to act on greed, anger, delusion. And we're not the only ones who are going to benefit. The people around us benefit as well. So goodwill, both for ourselves and the people around us, is what underlies what we're doing. But you notice that the Buddhist teachings and the Brahma-viharas are the sublime attitudes that we chanted just now. They don't end just with goodwill. The three other qualities come along as well: compassion, appreciation, and equanimity. Compassion and appreciation follow very naturally from goodwill. In other words, if you wish for your own happiness, you wish for the happiness of the people around you, then when you see suffering, you want to see it end. That's what compassion is about. May all beings be free from all stress and pain, all beings, that includes ourselves, as well as everybody around us. And when you see that people are happy, you appreciate their happiness. You don't get jealous. You don't get irritated by their happiness. You realize that happiness has to come from a cause. If it's their good behavior in the present moment, then it's easier to feel appreciation for their happiness. Sometimes it comes from things they did in the past. Their current behavior doesn't seem to be all that inspiring. In cases like that, it's a little bit harder. But you keep remembering, okay, these things come from a cause. Try to appreciate that fact. And don't make it your duty in life to put an end to somebody else's happiness. So these three qualities go together as a cluster: goodwill, which is a wish for happiness; compassion, which is a wish to see an end for suffering; appreciation, which is to wish for the continuation of happiness that's already there. And you can work on these qualities in your breath. In fact, this provides the foundation for these sublime attitudes. They're not just thoughts that come floating in and floating out without a foundation. If you learn how to work with your breath, with the attitude of the breath, whatever you can do to make it comfortable, you're happy to do. You're happy to give that much attention to the breath. You're happy to spend the time that's needed. Because you see the benefits. The breath is probably the most intimate part of our mind's relationship to the body. This flow of energy. In fact, it's so intimate that we overlook it. We tend to focus on things outside and miss what's going on in this point of contact between body and mind. So we decide to turn around and look at this. Get sensitive to how the body feels from the inside. Work with the properties of breath and fire and earth and water. If you find that a helpful way of looking at the body. Or just work with the breath, the flow of energy. There are parts of the flow that come in and go out. Others stay in the body, flow from one part of the body to another. Some spin around in place. There's a lot to learn about the breath if you really give it the time. If you really pay close attention to it. Because it's all right here. Just simply a matter of whether you choose to look here or look someplace else. And looking here, you want to look continuously. The result is that as the mind and the body become more comfortable with each other, you find it easier to wish for your own happiness, and you find it easier to wish for the happiness of other people. Most time when we resent other people's happiness, it's because we're feeling miserable. Or when we want other people to suffer, it's because we're suffering ourselves. But if you're able to give rise to a level of well-being inside, it's a lot easier to wish for other people's well-being. This is why working with the breath is such an important part of developing these attitudes. But it's inevitable that as you're working with the breath, as when you're dealing with people outside, that not everything is going to go the way you want it to. It's fun when you're playing with the sense of the body to be able to manipulate the breath, to change the flow of the energy. But there are times when you find that you can't, or that whatever you seem to do just seems to be mucking everything up. This is when that fourth sublime attitude comes in, equanimity. Sometimes equanimity is translated as a non-reactive awareness or just total indifference, but that's not the case. You notice those phrases that we chant just now for developing the sublime attitudes. The first three start with may all beings be happy, may all beings be freed from suffering, may they not be deprived of the good fortune they have attained. That's the expression of a desire, an aspiration. Equanimity, however, is just a plain indicative statement of fact. All living beings are the owners of their actions, heirs to their actions, born of their actions. Whatever they do, for good or for evil, to that will they fall heir. There's no may in there at all. It's just this is the way things are. Equanimity basically means acceptance of the principle of karma, that your present experience is shaped to some extent by your present intentions, but there's also a large part that can be shaped by your past intentions. And you can't do anything about your past intentions right now. This principle applies to you, it applies to all the people around you. On the outside level, it means that sometimes no matter how much you want to see somebody else be happy, there's nothing you can do. Or the many things you can try to do, nothing works. That's what you have to accept with equanimity. If you can't accept it, it means you're going to waste a lot of your energy trying to help someone that can't be helped, rather than devoting it in another area where somebody can be helped. The Thais have a word for the understanding karma. Actually, what they say is the rhythm of things. It's not that someone who has just totally bad karma will always suffer. What it means is that the teaching on karma is that specific actions will bear fruit at specific times. So if someone may be experiencing bad karma right now, it doesn't mean that they're just loaded down with bad karma. It means that particular action is bearing fruit right now. They may also have other good actions in their past, which have not yet borne fruit. So you can't judge a person by their position in life, by their level of happiness or pain. Teaching on karma is not meant to be used that way. You can't look at somebody and immediately gauge their karma account. But what it does mean is that there is a rhythm to life. Sometimes you're experiencing the fruit of bad karma. Sometimes you're experiencing the fruit of good past karma. And you have to learn to adjust your attitude to fit in with a rhythm. In other words, if your past karma is such that nothing seems to be working right now, you have to develop patience. Develop as positive an attitude as you can. Focus on what areas you can affect, i.e. your intentions right now. Make sure your intentions are good. Make sure your intentions are skillful. And as for the things that you can affect, well, just let them go. Sometimes the rhythm of karma is such that it may take a while. So you learn patience, which is another skillful attitude. So the teaching on equanimity doesn't mean you just accept everything as it is. It means that you accept the fact that there are some areas right now that you can't make any difference. So you just have to learn how to accept them with equanimity. And then turn your attention to the areas that can be affected, i.e. your present intentions. Those are always open to your manipulation. Those can always be under your control at the present moment if you learn to focus specifically on them and not let yourself get tied down by things that you can't change. We meditate because we want results, but it's not the case that we can always get the results we want right away. It's like making scrambled eggs. The right way to make scrambled eggs is put them over very low heat and stir and stir and stir. And it's going to take a while. If you get impatient, you turn up the heat. What happens? You don't get nice, soft scrambled eggs. You get rubber. It's the same with the mind. When things don't go the way we want them, we start getting more controlling. We start getting more rigid in our attitudes about what we want to do. We try to force things. Sometimes they can't be forced. So equanimity means the realization that, okay, when things can't be forced, you've got to step back. And whatever it is that you can't control, you let it take its own time, develop and go away at its own pace. You focus your efforts instead on the skillfulness of your present intentions, which may require, okay, patience, equanimity. Doing your best to put as much positive energy into the situation and not getting upset because the results are not immediate. The important thing is that you're secure in your confidence. Okay, as long as you put in positive energy, there's going to have to be positive effects. It's going to have to be positive results. If not right now, someplace down the line. And that's what you can be in control of, the fact that you're putting in positive energy, putting in skillful intentions right now. As for when they'll bear fruit, that's up to them. That's up to the whole mix of your karma. So it's important that you understand what equanimity means. It doesn't mean that you're totally non-reactive to anything, that you're just a piece of wood lying around that doesn't react. It means you're selective in where you focus your energies, learning how to accept the things that you can't change and work on the things that you can. And in this way, your desire for happiness, both for yourself and other people, doesn't turn into suffering. We all want happiness. Our problem is that many times we want it faster than it can come. In cases like that, if we don't learn how to develop patience and equanimity, we're going to suffer. This is why equanimity is such an important part of those four sublime attitudes. to keep some grounded in reality. We're not just sitting around thinking nice thoughts and hoping that simply the power of nice thoughts is going to give immediate results. Sometimes the rhythm of karma is such that they do give immediate results, but sometimes it's not that way at all. Sometimes it's going to take a while. But equanimity rests on the confidence that as long as you're putting in positive energy, things will have to come out at some point. So it's important that that's what you're careful about, is what intentions you're putting into the whole process right now. Make sure that they're skillful. They're not being pushed around by greed or anger or delusion or impatience or fear. Try to take nourishment from your confidence in the principle of karma, principle of action, that skillful actions will lead to good results. Maybe you can't get the results you want right now, but you can put in good energy right now. Try to develop as much skillfulness in your attitude as you can. That's what's important. That's what we're trying to develop as we meditate. The word for meditation in Pali is development. We're trying to develop skillful attitudes, skillful intentions. So make sure that you focus your energy there.